This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 462, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 4. That took a lot out of me. This is 462. It's fine. I don't have to be excited about everything. Also, this week's special guest, Suzanne Blachette. I am Josh Flanagan. With me are Paul Montgomery.
Hello.
And Connor Kilpatrick.
What does Suzanne Blachette read?
She reads Harley Quinn.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah. I would have her on.
I'd have her on in a minute.
Ray Liotta laughed at you for a second there. We are iFanboy. We like comics. Every week we read a bunch of comics, and one of us picks the best book they read. We call that the pick of the week. We talk about it here on the show, along with other books from the week, various topic. Some stuff comes up. This week we're introducing a new segment. The last 26 minutes of the show will be Connor and I talking about Warfare.
We're just making it official now.
Yeah. 28 minutes. Probably...
2029.
Probably about we're finished with the pick of the week. Maybe before then, we're just going to start. And today's topic is World War One and America's place in it. Because the whole thing's too big.
And not even the comics about it. It's not even like the comics about
we're done,
World War One.
Listen, it's time for a format change. Before we get going, here's
again,
a warning.
It's not so much a format change. It's just there's a jingle now.
Yeah. Well, we got it. We have a sponsor.
The same thing we always do.
We have a sponsor.
The History Channel. They came on. They were like, we need you guys to talk about war. And we're like, how'd you even find it?
Because we won't anymore.
So, spoilers.
This week on Pawn Stars.
Veterans Day. On Veterans Day, they couldn't have any goddamn coverage on veterans. It was all fucking American Pickers or whatever that was.
That's like history. Because the stuff is old.
Yeah, it's old people on it.
Are we going to start complaining about the media now every show? And another thing that's wrong.
She was the guy who's going to get eaten by a snake. You need a special suit so he can get eaten by an anaconda, and how does he get out?
Like he gets all the
how
way
does
in?
He breathe? I don't understand.
He's got a tank.
They wrote letters apparently. Anyway,
there's spoiler warning, blah blah blah. There's gonna be spoilers.
There's an article about a guy who's gonna run up Everest, and I don't even see how that works because of the death zone and the oxygen and the whatnot. Maybe he gets a tank. I have to read the article. How far is this? The farthest we've gone off topic as soon as
maybe
possible?
He'll ride one of those bikes with a giant wheel in the front and a little wheel in the back.
Penny farthing.
Oh. Yes.
I almost said velocipede. That's early. Velocipede.
Paul.
Early bikes.
Paul, you had to pick.
I did have the pick. I had a tough choice this week. I had a tough choice between two Scott Snyder books that I really, really liked. And it's sort of a matter of degrees. But anyways, I went with Witches number 2. It was excellent. I've been on sort of a Stephen King kick of late. I just read Pet Sematary for Halloween. And he mentions it in the back, but Scott Snyder clearly very influenced by Stephen King in the, I don't know, in the themes and the tone that he's approaching here. And I'm really enjoying this as a horror book that has characters that you care about. There are plenty of like slasher comics and like gothic horror comic books and, you know, Lovecraftian things. This is something that is real. It feels really personal. And like with a lot of Remender books lately, they're sort of like, you know, an open vein. You can tell they're very sort of semi-autobiographical. And here it's just a lot of the touches, like these two brothers, Sailor's father and her uncle, talking about what it's like having kids and worrying about them. He says it's like you have an organ that was part of you, and now it's out of the world.
There's not real Scott in there.
Yeah,
I know he's got two little kids, and I have little kids, and I was like, "Yep, there you go, that's good stuff."
And I was just like, "Wow, there's, you know, this is more than just, you know, the knife coming up and down, and like it's not just, you know, vampires and fangs and stuff. This is something that's deeper than that." And I mentioned it when I tweeted out about the pick, that the colors on this were just insane. And even more so than the first time, the sequence where Sailor goes into the pool and under the water, and it's sort of dreamlike. And I guess it's an escape, but she's being bothered, or it's her perception that she's being bothered about, you know, her having attacked somebody. And you're just the psycho kid in school. And what's the story behind that? And then she goes under the water and she doesn't have to, you know, hear that anymore.
Yeah, yeah. And then the creepy, creepy, creepy neck thing happens. You know what's interesting to me is that you bring up Hollingsworth, and I actually looked at that. I didn't realize it was him, you know, but when you're going to talk about Hollingsworth, this is the same guy who did Hawkeye. Mm-hmm. You know, and that sort of like purple monochromatic sort of thing they had there. And this is 180 degrees.
It's a completely different atmosphere and feeling. Like when I think about Hawkeye, I don't necessarily think about coloring outside the lines. Mm-hmm. And I guess when you're coloring over Jock's pencils
versus Aja, but
you know, but when you're thinking about coloring Jock, I mean, even still, this is just so out there and psychedelic. And it really added to this whole thing. It's super creepy, and it just felt like this. He's telling a bigger story here than just these are witches out in the woods. There's stuff about, you know, depression and anxiety and loss, and it really just reminded me of Stephen King quite a bit.
I think what was cool about this issue was that they got right to it. I was like, oh, you're just gonna start this stuff. Like I thought we were gonna like hang out a little longer before we got to the part where people are getting offed, you know, like there's the cold open murder or disappearance or whatever, and then there's the one in the past. But like in this one, they just start going right after the characters. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, okay, that's quite a bit.
We've got an amputee who is missing the bottom parts of his legs, and he attacks Sailor's dad with his prosthetic legs, and it's just a super creepy image. And there's something, some kind of thing that he does at the end.
That's actually a really good, that's a good segue to start War Corner.
We're going in early.
We just wait for the first possible time you can make
a segue. The next 53 minutes are going to be about war.
And amputees.
I thought this was good. I thought it wasn't quite as good as the first issue, which I thought was really just amazing from top to bottom. This is more like settling in after a really amazing cold open. And it was good. It was very good. I'm not saying it wasn't. It's just I didn't love it quite as much as the first one. But if anything, this was a Jock and Hollingsworth tour de force.
Yeah. I mean, this made you want more.
Definitely.
Like,
oh, absolutely.
Like you're like, oh, whoa, where's the next? Whoa, where's the next one?
There's an interesting effect in me. I hope it's not some sort of defect in the issue I've got, but there's like these subtle paint splotches on every page.
Yeah.
Which I'm not quite sure what the effect they're going for is, but I like it.
Well, I think
it makes me very uncomfortable.
It's like if you, I don't know, if you stare at the sun or like it's really bright outside and you come into the dark and then you just still have those spots in front of your eyes.
It's like somebody spilled bleach on it or
something.
It's
so unusual.
Yeah.
I mean, it's such a strange way to go. And I don't mean that in a bad way. just compared to the standard comic book color. And
well, it gives the whole thing a texture that other books don't have.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I totally Josh, how do you feel about a book set in New Hampshire? You don't get many of those.
I'm good with it. It's funny because it's funny because all of the Stephen King stuff obviously is set in Maine. Mm-hmm. And the places are very similar. You know, New Hampshire is maybe a bit more libertarian, whereas Maine is a I don't know. I can get into the subtle regional differences, but it's like it's one step over from Maine. No. Stephen King, you get Maine. I'm going to set my creepy story 1 hour to the west. But no, I like that. I like the idea of, you know, I went to the, you know, I went to this place to get away from all of the things that I wasn't happy about in my other life, and it's a new start, and that's all ringing very familiar to me, to a certain extent. I don't want to incriminate myself, but there, you know, let's just assume there were no murders or anything in my past.
Well, the thing is, if you had a daughter who was involved in a situation involving a possible murder in the woods, would you move into more woods?
There's woods everywhere.
You really like woods?
Not necessarily. You go live in the middle of Manhattan. There's no woods.
No one in their right mind would do that. Is that how it was? Like they lived? I guess they'd lived near. I mean, but there's. We don't know.
Because the incident involved the tree people. Yeah. People thought she killed the girl, but it was actually the tree people.
But there are trees everywhere. Don't forget Scott Rhodes, Swamp Thing. He knows about trees.
Also the tree people or witches with a Y are very disturbing looking. We have a sequence where the mom remembers having run into one.
Running it over in a car. That's why she's paralyzed.
It was interesting. There's a lot of jarring cuts in here, and it felt very. We say cinematic a lot in terms of like camera angles, but in this sense, I just mean editing wise. Like you wouldn't see this necessarily in literature. How quickly they go between sequences, and there's sort of these these match cuts with flashbacks, and it's a little bit disorienting, and. In some cases, I mean, not handled well, that would really, really irk me. But I thought it added to the sense of paranoia and, you know, everybody's worrying about what's happening with the other person, you know. You know, dad's wondering what's going on with the kid. Kids, you know, thinking about the woods and what's out there and what's, you know, waiting for her out there and what really happened. And it should be a little bit jarring.
Aren't there the places where like a meteor landing has wiped out all the trees for like a 20-mile radius? Or I think those are those places like in Russia and Siberia. I'd go move there.
Yeah.
Don't you think? I mean, you're living in Siberia, but
you know what? I don't think Russia's the place I want to be right now. But that's really more of a socioeconomic global perspective.
Which is just quite good. Which is Snyder and Jock have a really good book on their hands right now. If you haven't read it, it's only two issues in. I would definitely check it out if you like horror. Even if you're not, it's not super horror-y, although I guess it is.
But I mean, you know what I mean? Like, there's so many horror books out there, but you don't always just like care about the characters.
There are
these characters.
A lot of horror books out there.
Yeah, and I feel like Walking
Dead is like a fucking cash machine. So
yeah, but I don't even count it like that. I just think if you look at, especially Image has had a lot of, and I don't read them, but like there's this whole subset of. Like Justin Jordan's book and mm-hmm. Nailbiter. I forget what, like, is it Flesh or something? I forget what it is. It's gross, and I'm not going to read it. But like, there's a whole lot of those sort of like chill you out books. And I was thinking about this, not chill you out like relax, but chill your bones or whatever.
just chill, man.
Just chill yourself
it's cool.
out.
Cool. Just be
no,
cool.
But I was thinking about because I don't like horror. And I was trying to think
I was literally going to wait for a break in your monologue to say, you're not a horror fan, so
yeah.
But you like this.
I mean, I like this. I like the skill of it. But I was thinking, like, what is a thing that makes you like? Does it make people scared? Is that what they like? Or do they want to be scared? Or I mean,
I think it depends on the book. I think there are a lot of them that are just. I mean, like slasher films aren't scary.
No, they startle you, and then maybe they make you feel the heebie-jeebies.
There's a bit
but
of
there's
a
also
rush
like the trappings of it, mm-hmm. and it's like if you're into like Fangoria and stuff like that, it's just about the gross out stuff.
And we say that Scott does it, but really, you know, he's got some of that, but really, it's more about creeping you out.
Yeah, it's about dread versus shock.
Yeah, yeah.
He's not writing Saw here, even though it is bloody. No. There are he's writing thriller slash kind of slashery, but it's more psychological horror. This is not Saw.
I mean, like it's like Pet Sematary. I mean, it feels like that. It's it's, I mean, even though there is a cat that jumps out, like every once in a while, it's more about the building impending doom, you know, and it just, it's a nice family and they just want to get away from everything and it won't let them. And
isn't that, you know, that's very similar to what's that, your other favorite horror book, Lock and Key.
Lock and Key, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's
Paul likes to see nice people put in terrible situations.
I like being invested in that
rural areas.
He likes giving shit. He'll see like a rider truck cross the street, and he'll see a nice family moving in next door, and he goes, "Well, I wonder what horrible thing could happen to them."
The only shock horror thing that I like that's not about dread that is about the shock is the thing in Mad Men with the lawnmower in the office.
That was played like a joke though.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I'm saying.
You read Stray Bullets. That's horrible.
Mm-hmm.
All the time.
Yep.
Make you feel bad about humanity. So there's something there for you. That's
speaking of horrible, Batman 36. I didn't think there would be a way to top how creepy the removed face Joker was from the first storyline. But I thought the new Joker here was much creepier looking.
This is a transformation. It's just a normal dude. Yeah, wait a minute. There's something off about his eyes.
It's the,
and he's talking normally. Yeah.
It's the Morrison doctrine of Joker. The Morrison Joker doctrine, which
yes.
I like, is that he, you know, reinvents himself.
He goes through a cycle.
Yeah, he goes through a psychotic break and is a new version of himself. And I really like that framing device, the way that works and how they used it here and how they got his face back on, and you know, like, let's, like, here's another Joker, and it's like he's continuing the same story, but it's even a different look on it.
This was good. This was very, very good. This so the last issue, if you recall, the Justice League was Jokerized, and so here Batman subdues them all, starts hunting for the Joker, and we find that I guess we met this doctor last week or before.
He was from Batman. He was from Batman Annual.
I don't think I read that one. So he shows up at Arkham Asylum. This doctor from Arkham Asylum is talking to him, and slowly but surely you realize this guy's actually the Joker in disguise. And it was a very, again, very creepy moment when he starts removing his face paint and talks about muscle relaxers, and then out of the mist comes this new Joker with a very, very wrinkly face, and I just thought it was a really great job by Capullo.
And he's got the face. He's got the old face, and he's like playing with it like it's a mask and stuff. And
that thing must smell horrible.
Yeah, super creepy.
Browner.
Yeah, and even before that, the Jokerized Superman was really creepy. And he had blood on his face, which made it look like he had, you know, the Joker like lips.
Yeah.
And how many times have we seen, you know, Batman versus Superman, and he even, you know, sort of referred, it's kind of meta the way he acts, like he's talking about who's going to win in a fight, Batman or Superman, and all the banter there was just like he's a comic book fan talking about it, so that's how detached you get, and I thought that was really great. So it has this great, you know, like last time we talked about, it's a sort of a dumb idea, like having all the Justice League fight each other. We've seen it a million times, and it's just sort of like for the pure fun of it. But Snyder made it cerebral. Like there are really clever ways to how he, you know,
we were talking about like for a little while, I was like, are we in Elseworlds? I couldn't remember where we left off. And I was like, oh, he's just doing the Batman versus Superman thing for a while.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
If that's all this was, I was totally cool with that. Because I really like to watch people work their way through how that, like the mini suns in the glove.
Mm-hmm.
That's rad.
Yeah, like tiny slivers.
I got a glove full of mini red suns, bitch.
Right, but like, and then I started doing the math, like, Ray Palmer helped me capture these dying suns, and we miniaturized them. And I was like, that would take an incredible amount of resources. Like, did nobody notice that Ray Palmer was gone for 20 years while he journeyed from universe to universe, capturing and shrinking suns? That's
time is relative in space.
I guess.
Oh, a couple of Green Lanterns, they slingshot you some red suns. I don't know. It doesn't really matter.
So this really great set piece, and I wanted to mention real quick. I love the Alfred scene, where we see Alfred kind of break. And usually, you know, Alfred is, you know, steady as she goes.
Absolutely. Yeah.
He's, you know, he's the constant. And here he's, I want you to get the bastard. And he has to sit down, and he's, you know, he's he's reeling. He's hurt. And,
I like that. That was I thought really nice continuity from the last story.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just resetting it at zero, that was cool.
Well, yeah, and also it's tying in Batman Eternal. That's why Alfred is injured, and that's why his daughter's there. And
okay, that's
why.
Question.
That's why. Where'd Arkham Asylum has been blown up, and that's why Arkham people are living in the Wayne Manor.
Is she a character who's new completely, or is she somebody
I've
know
never
about?
Seen her before.
Okay, then I'm going to go ahead and with new.
Yeah. She's his military daughter.
She's the Brady Bunch Oliver of the Batman universe.
Right. Good stuff from Snyder this week.
Yep.
Very good.
Strong so, Snyder. Copperhead.
Yeah, are you either of you guys reading this?
No, I missed the boat on it, but I've heard very good things.
So I'm going to talk about the book to a certain extent, but it also led me to another thing.
Okay,
Copperhead 4 is the fourth issue of this series by Jay Ferber, and basically it's a new sheriff arrives in town, Western,
this Image,
but in space. Yeah, Image, but in space with aliens and different sort of cultures and. Sort of rednecks, and it's really well done. It's sort of episodic television, like a cop show. Like every episode, you will, you know, get another piece of the puzzle, but it's definitely sort of piece by piece as you go through it. Really well done. Great, great sort of graphic covers, and you know, like the mysterious of the unknown world and all this, and the Drifter and all this stuff going on, and the mystery and the plot, and it's real good, and people like it. And I like it, but I'm like, actually, it's number four, or three, not four. And I just kind of thought, I was like, but I don't really want to keep reading it. And I'm getting to the point where there's too many good comic books.
Mm-hmm.
I can't read everything like it used to be. Hey, this is really good. You have to read it because it's a good comic book. You want to support it. At this point, Image literally has too many good comic books for me to keep up with all the time, and I can't do it. And people are like, well, just go back and read them and trade later. It's just not it. There's always going to be more stuff that comes out. And I feel like this is one of the ones that I have to let go. And it's not that it's bad. It's not, you know, I'm interested in it. I'm not super interested, but it's real good. And so, like, I want to recommend it, but I also don't want to read it, which is a weird position for me to be in, I've found. Is this just me? Is the only one you're like, no, it is real good.
I think totally a while ago we had somebody write in with a question like, is Image like just like oversaturated with like so many good things?
I asked
Can
Ron
the market
that.
Possibly support all of the goodness?
See, I asked Ron that, and he said, and what he said back to me was, and this was just over dinner or whatever, and I was like, do you ever worry that there's like too many good books? And he's like, that's ridiculous. And I was like, you're right. like it is. Like,
you're an idiot.
Don't make more good stuff. Okay, you're right. That's a stupid thing to say. You know,
I think what it manifests for me is when I don't often try new ones, mm-hmm. which is why I didn't read Birthright when it first came out, which is why I didn't read the Busick book we talked about last week, just because you're right. There's seemingly an endless supply of great stuff coming out of Image, and I'm not at my saturation point, but
and I'm certainly
glad we don't have to do the Pick of the Week on Wednesdays anymore. But
yeah,
it's now when a new number one comes out. I both am interested but also weary because I can't be reading 30 books a
month. It's not about money. It's literally there's just too many things between this and TV and the internet or whatever. Like there's so many things and you can't consume everything. Like it's impossible. And comics are it's interesting. I don't know if there's ever been this many good new comic books.
Right.
I can't remember.
So is it a question?
That was the case.
So why this particular one? Is it because there are too many other books that are like this that are really good, and this is the lesser of those?
I don't imagine there's very many space cop books.
No. Well, maybe is there a lot of procedurals or a lot of space books? Because there are a lot of space books.
If this was a TV show and you took out the space aspect, I wouldn't watch it.
Okay.
And then, what is it that's interesting about it? Well, sort of the
Is it Longmire stuff. In space?
Yes. There's a little of that going on, yeah, but like more focused on the long story because it's not like a case every episode. It's one long case, so more like a Justified season, not the first season, but any of the ones after that,
right.
And not the second season because that's amazing, and I wouldn't drop that. It's a thing I've been thinking about. And like, there's other books that I'm like, I don't think I can keep reading this just because.
What if
there's
you took?
Wrong with it. There's been a couple of books, and I can't think of them off the top of my head at the moment that I have stopped just because, you know, it's fine.
Yeah.
It's good. But
it's a good book, and I think it's for – because there's things that I don't like because I don't like them, and there's things that I don't like because they're not for me. And then some things I like – like there's another thought I've been having is that it's okay if you like a thing. It still might be shitty. You can like a shitty thing. Like that's fine. You know,
what if you take the time?
I can't support everything that's
you
good.
Use worrying about this to then you could read other things.
I'm not going to say it takes up a lot of actual calendar time.
I could see you stewing about
how many
this.
Hours a day are you thinking about this?
Well, I mean, can you even call it thinking about something if you're spending less than 6 to 8 hours a day?
Well, that's true.
That's not even think. That's a
that's amateur work.
Less than that is a passing fancy, really. Speaking of passing fancies, I think you'll find that the invasion into Luxembourg in 1916... You know what? No, let's just save it.
What's The Kitchen, number one?
The Kitchen.
It's a new book from Vertigo.
Yeah. And
Josh, you read this?
Yes, of course I did. But I'll tell you why I did. Because
you like cooking.
No. Did you read this? I know, Paul, you read it, I was happy for it. The thing is, this.
But you
is,
love Connor more, and you want him to.
No, I want to know what he thought of it, because you.
Well, much like we talked about this during War Stories, mm-hmm. You know, you gotta let me know now.
I did.
You did,
but it was today. So.
Well, that's no good. Yeah, okay, let me so know. I need 24 hours notice.
The pitch is: it appears to be the 70s, maybe early 80s. Hell's Kitchen, New York. These three local crime guys get. All put away at the same time, and so their wives are left to take things over, and the one woman starts making the collections. She's going around.
They're like, "Aren't you doing the collections?"
That would never
me?
Happen.
Well, no, that's the story. So she goes to the other woman, like, "Well, you're making Richie's collections." I don't know if his name's Richie, but it may as well be because why not? Or Tommy, or whoever, whatever random Irish gangster name. And she's like, "No, we gotta go make the collections." So they all get in the car, they go to make the collections. And the guy's like, "Who the fuck are you?" And then she gets mad, she takes the gun out, she beats the guy up. And then you
Called
find
him a wop.
Yeah, she did, because he was an Italian.
Yep.
And greaseball. Mm-hmm.
Oh my god.
And then they find out that he is the brother of some mob guy, and like that's the end of the issue. Really interesting premise, actually, because it explores an area of crime, you know, like organized crime in New York City in a period piece.
Are these the Westies?
No, I don't think. I don't know. They haven't gotten that far. I don't know how they're exactly affiliated. They don't really.
Even the Westies were mob affiliated.
This is on somebody the cover. In New York City, in New York City, you don't earn respect staying at home. You earn it out on the streets.
Yeah, so it's like a gender swap kind of deal. Little bit of a period piece. There's a very nice what's her name, Becky Cloonan cover, which is not what the inside art is. The inside art is Ming Doyle, which is nice. Also,
all right, I'm gonna download it.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't think it was great. I thought it was interesting. I thought it was.
Here we go again.
No, I thought it was interesting.
I know where he's
going. Pretty good.
And the reason we're talking about like just the you know what you know they call the guy and everything. I like the concept.
Yep.
But a lot of it feels, I don't even mean about it, but a lot of it feels like sort of like paint by numbers.
Yes.
Mob
it's,
story.
It's a version of a mob story that you got if you learned about the mob from watching television shows about the mob.
That's what it feels like.
So there's a lot of potential, but there is an air of artifice about it, like a Dick Wolf show, sort of. You know,
and there's part of that could work because like the three of them are only like their knowledge of the business is secondhand. It's their husbands did this or their boyfriends, and now they're taking things over. And there's something a little bit postmodern about them, like basing their actions mm-hmm. upon what they saw in The Sopranos.
And there's also a really nice moral gray area ambiguity that can be because if these are good, they're nice girls, you know, like, but they have. They're doing a bad thing, and that's an interesting area to be in. Like, are you going to root for them? Are they the protagonists? They beat the shit out of this guy. I didn't do anything. They wanted him to give him their money. Was it their money? It's a protection.
You don't
racket.
Give respect, then you get beat.
You don't give respect, you gotta earn it.
It's true.
I Yeah, Paul, that, I think you sort of nailed exactly where
sort of what the main character's like. Is like, this is how it's done. This is what we have to do. They're on the inside. We've got to take care of it out here, or else what's going to like. And then the other two are just kind of like following her lead.
Like if you imagine that Jennifer Lawrence from the movie, I can't think of the
American Hustle.
That's it. I kept wanting to say American Gangster. Like, she decided to go out and start being the criminal because Christian Bale was gone. It's like,
that'd be an awesome movie. I want to see that movie.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's a good premise. I wanted to read it. It lacks
like the microwave thing. Like, it doesn't have that extra thing.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. It needs a little bit more color to differentiate it from other mob stories.
Good premise.
It really is. I was like, I could totally see this as like a new like HBO series or even like an NBC thing if they softened it.
Yeah. Guys, I don't want you to worry because Jordi Belair colored it.
Yeah, but then that didn't hurt. I thought, oh.
I didn't want you to think that there was a book that came out that she didn't color.
Mm-hmm.
She got it. She's on top of it.
At what point are we going to are the other colorists going to start the backlash? I mean, Hollingsworth.
Someone should check on her well-being.
I'm just saying. That's why there's a reason she moved to Ireland. It wasn't safe anywhere else. It's not like she could have been in New York City. They'd have come for her.
So this week we had three of the all-new Marvel books. Thor number 2, all new Captain America number 1, and Superior Iron Man number 1.
I don't think that I was prepared for this wholesale switchover. I think it's still taking me by surprise every week.
So this is interesting. Let's talk about Thor number 2 first, and then the other two are – that's where things get kind of wonky. But Thor number 2 I thought was way better than the first one, mostly because I couldn't even tell you – if one of these girls from the kitchen came and put a gun in my head, I couldn't even tell you what happened in the first one. I thought that as I was reading it.
That was a good call. So when we were talking about the kitchen.
Thank you. I really did like this one, though. I thought it was a nice interplay between this character's thoughts.
Thor and herself.
Jason Aaron bringing back the thought balloon in full force. And then what actually she says verbally, which is in Thor speak, and then in her head, which is his normal speak. And I thought that was interesting.
So, obviously, at the end of the last one, the red herring was that it was going to be Thor's mother, Freyja. And that's not who it is, because she doesn't know anything about any of this stuff. So, it's the girlfriend, right?
I have no idea.
It's the shield. The shield. Environmental Solomon? Lady. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't know, but that seems to be the most obvious choice.
I felt like it was
seen Thor.
Yeah, I felt like in the first issue, it was too obvious that it was Freyja.
Yeah.
But
there were no clues that it could have been a different person. There was no other options.
This feels like I was like going through my head. I was like, it could be any number of people. Like it could be Gwen Stacy. I don't even know. Like, it could be anybody.
Yeah, there weren't any clues really.
So then, and then I was like, they're throwing us for such a loop that it doesn't even necessarily have to be a blonde character. Like, it could be Roz Solomon.
Yeah.
It could be anybody.
It could be Clint Barton.
It could be Clint Barton.
It's probably not Clint Barton.
Probably not.
Well, it could be.
But I think it's
wouldn't that be an interesting twist?
I'm saying it's possible.
I don't think it is, though.
I'm saying it's right on the bubble.
Yeah, but I mean, it's very, I just don't think that would be a thing.
I think it's obviously him, though.
Yeah.
I think if she starts growing stubble next month, then we'll know.
I love the stuff where she's fighting with Mjolnir. Not like this. And the trajectory, like where she's fighting.
Hold on, you need a moment for that.
Okay, well, it's all right.
There we go.
It's like very go-to Hawkeye joke. But anyway, she's like, you know, where she's attacking and stuff. And so I thought the action in this was great. I think Russell Dowderman doing some amazing work.
Really great stuff.
Gorgeous.
Along with that lettering, with the flying around the frost giant and the whatever.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Whoever the hell did that?
I think that Jason Aaron should write the Roxanne characters all the time.
I love the trolls that are just on
the letter of Josephino, just to give him credit.
Yeah, I don't even know that dude. It's one of Eliopoulos' guys. I get that.
But
he's a virtual calligraphist.
The Roxanne thing made me realize just like how much mythology he's already built up.
Oh yeah.
And I think that's great. And I loved seeing the trolls. And so he's playing with a lot of different tones here because we know
there's a lot of things from all of his stories in this.
Yeah. So we have the Minotaur guy, and
being said, I thought it was really well done. It was cool and everything, but it didn't harden my nipples up like the old series did.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't that. We used to finish that and just. I mean, and Russell Donovan's real good, but that other one was something super.
You saw Ribic?
Yeah.
And yeah. When like that felt, it felt like a meal every time you read one of those issues. And now this is really, really good. But when I got to the last page, I was like, oh, that's it.
Yeah.
Wanted to go a little bit further just in terms of the structuring of how that chapter went. But, you know, there's a lot of stuff in there.
Okay, so over in Avengers and X-Men Axis, the event running through Marvel right now that Recommender is writing, and seems to come out once a week, I think. So
yes, it does.
Or it's like 3 out of 4 weeks, something like that. I don't know. So the story in that one, I'm just recapping for the listeners and for Josh, because I know he's not reading it, is that the Avengers were fighting a super souped-up Red Skull who had the brain of Charles Xavier. And so he has some of his powers, and so they were on...
Wait, if he has the brain of Charles Xavier, then the body of Onslaught, what the Red Skull does he have?
Bring me the brain of Xavier. So they were on, like, Genosha or some island. They were fighting him, and there was a psychic blast. They tried to attack him psychically, Dr. Doom and Scarlet Witch and all these people. And everyone on the island, because this wasn't all the Avengers, this was just one team of Avengers. Everyone on the island had their personalities shifted on an axis. And so the good guys suddenly had dickish inclinations, and the villains suddenly had inclination to be good.
I think a lot of people have dickish inclinations. It's sort of a problem with society.
And so now that we've
seen it's engorged
that,
their dickish inclinations.
Right. So this week's issue, we saw the Avengers from that island, which is basically all the main guys, Falcon, Cap, and the new Thor, and or old Thor, who's got the axe, and those people. Basically taking all the other Avengers, calling them for a meeting, and then sucking them down to a Henry Pym particle prison. So they're now gone, and they're left, except for Spider-Man and Nova, who escaped in the action. So that's what's been going on. So now we've got these new books, Superior Iron Man and All-New Captain America, which ostensibly both taking place now. Superior Iron Man directly deals with this. So he's a dick, Tony Stark, he goes to San Francisco, has his new chrome suit. It looks like an iPad or iPod. And then he gives the people of San Francisco through via an app the Extremis power to remake their body. So all of San Francisco is full of people who look like supermodels.
Oh, Christ.
Except for the lower.
As if they don't feel enough about themselves already.
Right. Well, except for the lower class, people who don't have smartphones or can't afford them, they obviously don't get the remake. So there's that whole class dynamic that's happening now in San Francisco played out here. And then he gives them the taste of this for a week, and then at the end of the week, the app ends, and they have to pay $99 a day to keep this going. So he's got them by the balls.
Jesus.
So that's makes sense within the world that we've built. But then in All-New Captain America, we have the very popular character from the very popular movie in Falcon, and they're just ignoring it. He's just completely played straight, which I thought was
Which is interesting
weird.
Because they're both Remender.
Right.
Smart.
And so I was really curious to see how they were going to play this because, again, everyone loved Falcon in the movie. He's a big deal. They've given him the shield, and they're just ignoring
right, so,
what's
okay,
going
so,
on. Because he's an asshole in the Axis book.
Right. So that aside, I didn't read Superior Iron Man, but I did read Captain America.
Yes.
And
holy shit,
super beautiful.
Holy shit. Like, gorgeous.
Yeah. Yeah.
Stuart Immonen. I think he's juicing.
Although, did you guys notice that in the beginning the shield had like a little hook on it?
No.
And then later on it was gone.
Oh,
minor.
Yeah, I did see that. I thought that was like an error. Wouldn't have a hook.
It's
on
in
it.
It's in two of the panels on that page.
I feel like that's some production.
And then
error.
And then it's gone. I think it was supposed to be like a motion line that got somehow you know inked into the
shield. I saw
anyway.
That. Yeah, no, I agree.
So, but this was fun. Captain America was super fun. It was just kind of like
great,
right.
Great action sequences. It's got the kid from Zemo Land.
I thought that was Bucky for a while, but it wasn't. It was Nomad. I thought, oh, he's going deep.
Yeah.
Also, let's give it up for a Batroc who is pretty much written like the French guy from the Holy Grail. I mean, it was like, and like he looks up and he's like Tempo Kukambush. And I was like, whoa! Just full on, as stupid French stereotype as you can get, go with it. And they gave him a rosy red nose. That was fun. I really liked Batroc in this. That was fun. And
he fell into red now.
Yeah.
He's dead.
They're also basically dropping him in the deep end. So we've got Batroc, we've got Baron Zemo, we've got Crossbones, we've got Taskmaster, we've got some dude that looks like the
Armadillo in there.
There's a fucking bat. I mean,
that's no, that's the bat is the oh, I forget his name, but he's.
I know these are all old school cap villains. So either these are fakes or they're just going
to
throw him
the
through
Nazi the Nazi to the left of Zemo.
He looks like Red Skull's son or something like that. But this was super good. I just couldn't shake my amusement in the fact that they didn't have the guts to make this guy a jerk too in his book because they're trying to sell.
You'd be a good cap villain, Ian McKellen from Apt Pupil.
Oh,
he was a Nazi.
He was a Nazi.
Trying to make his cat.
Race cars, lasers, airplanes. It's a duck.
And actually, I did like there was a moment here where you know I thought I had Remender outthought, but he outthought me, which was in the beginning. I thought, well, he's really good at that shield. Like he's bouncing it off walls, hitting dudes, and it sort of takes away from the specialness of Captain America. And if anyone can do it, you know, it's not hard. They should at least give him a learning curve, have him. You know, mess up a lot and be like, I'm getting better, but this is difficult. And then it happens where he goes down and he misses everybody and nobody makes fun of him. But at first I was like, he's really...
I went there too. I had that thought.
Bouncing it off the canyon walls. Like it's no problem. But
which
then
I
he
think
got
would be
me.
Harder than an interior surface because it's uniform.
Right. So then he throws at three guys and misses all of them completely. So Render got me.
But I mean, it could be, you know, it could be Sam and Nomad playing Twister for the rest of the run, and I would still read it because it's so goddamn gorgeous.
Yeah.
Well, there's no,
I think you should check out Iron Man, Paul.
Yeah.
It was actually, I wasn't going to check it out just because I didn't know the writer.
I'll check it out.
But I thought I'd out of completeness sake from what's going on, I thought I would at least read the first issue, and I actually thought it was fun, mostly because...
What's the team?
I'll tell you as I scroll down to the book. I thought it was fun because Iron Man is kind of a dick anyway.
Yeah.
It's not like a bridge too far to make him... This like a full on dick, and so like oh also he's drinking again.
That's
so,
nice.
So the writer is Tom Taylor, who you know.
Oh right.
And the artist is Yildiri Señor.
Oh, okay, cool.
I said let's check the first issue out. It's fun.
Yeah, I'm not historically an Iron Man guy, but this sounds kind of interesting.
It is interesting, and then She-Hulk's in it, and also Daredevil because they're both trying to clean up his mess
right.
Like you know he's screwing up San Francisco. So that's what's going on in Marvel right now.
Well, all right. What's going on? What's going on with shopping?
Well, holidays are coming. We're getting close. I was actually making my list last night. Started to make my holiday shopping list, and it's much longer than I always. I should know less people is what I'm getting down to. But if you're going to do any shopping, like I'm going to do a lot of my shopping, go to Amazon at Amazon. Go to ifanboy.com/Amazon. That's where you can make all your holiday purchases. We get a little piece of that action. Doesn't come out of your pocket. Comes out of Amazon's pocket. And it helps us keep going. It helps you shop in a timely manner. And if you saw Hachette and Amazon worked out their differences, so the Hachette books are back on Amazon. So no more
hash things out.
No more moral quandary there if you're on Hachette's side. And that's where we appreciate everyone who does their shopping in the holiday season at ifanboy.com/Amazon. And then you can also become an iFanboy member at ifanboy.com/registration, where for $3 a month, $30 a year, you can donate directly to the cause. And we appreciate everyone who does that, and you're all our favorite people.
Everyone.
Thank you.
Everyone. Another number one out from Image. I try to make an effort to read the number ones.
There's a lot of them. I'm really impressed that you do, but God, there's so many.
Yeah, this one is Ivan Brandon and Nick Klein. You may remember him as the team from Viking, a book that I remember nothing about. I remember wanting to like that
a
lot.
I read one issue and didn't make a appeal.
It was an odd shape.
This is actually very similar. It's called Drifter. A guy's rocket ship crashes in a small town that's sort of a Western in space.
So he's a space cop.
There's aliens. There's a space cop there. He's not the space cop.
So this is
cop
why
this
you
time.
Feel overloaded with space cop stories. Because you had
just,
two of them.
You know, that's what I'm just saying. It was pretty good. It didn't have a great hook. It has, like, Nick Klein is a great artist, and he's even better in this than he had been. I think he did a little Marvel work.
He did Captain America.
Yeah,
Captain America.
Yeah, he worked with Remender for a bit. There's a little mystery at the end. There's a whole little world. Some really nice landscape mixed with spaceship kind of stuff going on. You know, there's a little mystery.
So it's a little Mos Eisley, a little...
Yeah, there's definitely a little Mos Eisley. There's a bar fight. There's a preacher. You know, it's got all those elements, but it didn't quite have a thing that... You know what it reminded me of was Wasteland a little bit?
Sure.
In that, which like that book was well done, good world building, missing some kind of personality that made me want to love it.
I think the Hulk at the end isn't quite, you know, the Statue of Liberty, you know,
no,
coming out of
the hook
beach.
At the end is, I've only been asleep for a day. No, no, this was a month ago. And I was like, okay, well.
Month isn't that long.
It's a year, I think.
Really? Hold on.
Yeah, I think it's a year.
Let me look.
That's
yep,
longer.
Yep, a year ago. Yeah. Okay, either way. I mean, but you know, it's fine.
In that year, did someone destroy the Statue of Liberty?
I can't know yet, but I'd have to read the second issue, and I don't see that that's going to happen.
You know what was interesting, Paul, was this Savage Hulk little two-shot we had, Hulk number 6 this week, and I would have known about this if not for you talking about number 5 in the show, and this was a Gabriel Hardman, Karina Becko, two-shotter with Hulk and Doctor Strange. Really a Doctor Strange story.
Why didn't somebody tell me about that?
Because you weren't on the show that week when we talked about the first one, and you don't listen when you're not on.
I do too.
Because you're a raging egoist.
It's a problem with
egotist,
these.
Egotist, you dullard.
It's a problem with these like anthology books where it's you know issues 1 through 4 are this creative team, and then 5 and 6 are this, and so.
Go back and check this out, Josh. It's Hardman drew it, and they wrote it together, and it's a little story about Doctor Strange sending the Hulk into space.
Can we pause the show? I want to read it right now. Both of you, shut up.
Okay.
Just wait here. Talk about the Maginot line. I'll be back.
So I thought it was fun, Paul. I thought it was super fun.
Yeah, it's a great Doctor Strange story, and I think people are going to be asking, like, what Doctor Strange book should I read? Because the movie's coming out, you know, and this is a good one to write. I mean, before this, it was like Doctor Strange, The Oath. I mean, I know there are other Doctor Strange stories, but if you're telling somebody to go run out and grab something, you know, Doctor Strange, The Oath, and then this.
Savage Hulk 5 and 6, they came out in, you know, last 2 months. They're really fun. If you like Gabriel Harpin's art, he's really on it in this one. He draws a great Hulk.
Hulk is amazing.
Yeah, and also I would recommend that Silver Surfer issue that I told you about, that where Hulk and Doctor Strange.
I got that trade.
That was also
I'm gonna read that collection.
The newest issue came out this week, and I know it's not in the rundown, but this might be my favorite thing that Dan Slott's ever written. Yeah. I'm really enjoying every issue of Silver Surfer. Anyway.
But this is it's just a great classic old story. Like, it just feels like a Twilight Zone in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Good stuff.
So if you are a comic book reader and you are concerned about the future and that kids don't necessarily have something to read, and your kids are, let's say...
We were just saying there's too much to read.
6 to 10. Not for kids.
Not for kids.
Right. Kids 6 to 10, 6 to 12, something like that. You should be buying them HowToons. I think it's Reignite is the little thing.
Mm-hmm.
Reignition. The third issue is out. And this is written by Fred Van Lente, drawn by Tom Fowler. Tom Fowler, who is a certified comic book genius.
Mm-hmm.
And it's you know who it's colored by. it's like two kids, and there's all this do-it-yourself, how-to, and educational stuff in it that explains it with great illustrations and then a comic story going on at the same time. And I can tell you right now, none of the people are buying this. You should be buying this for your kids, just straight up. You know, it's like the guy who brought us comic book comics and Action Philosophers is really good at putting education and instruction and knowledge into comic book form, and then one of the great cartoonists in the industry, and obviously Jordi Belair. So I'm not at threat level yet, but I'm pretty close. I'm TNT.
She-Hulk 10 wrapped up the Old Man Cap storyline in which Daredevil and She-Hulk squared off in the courtroom about a case involving Captain America prior to his time as Captain America.
Bravo!
Really good.
Bravo!
Really good.
Yeah, it was great. It was just as good as the last issue that was Pick of the Week. Strong ending.
It was a great old man Cap fight scene.
Yep, and also,
I love that sequence. I read that page, and I was actually sad that we didn't do pick the best panels anymore, because that totally would have been sequence would have been one.
And a young Steve Rogers pre-Cap speech that I got done with it, and I was like, that was great. That's one of the better Cap speeches I've read in a while.
Did you get misty?
Full on America.
He had other issues going on, Paul. There was other things in his life that made him cry, but he was just happened to be thinking about that as he was reading She-Hulk.
It's the withdrawal. But great issue. Really, I mean, like you know, Charles, he could probably rock a Captain America book if he had to. Put the guy in a World War II Captain America book. That'd make me too jealous. I can't.
We've been looking for that book for 10 years now.
Yeah. We'll do it every once in a while, and then no one will buy it except for like 5 of us. So
now, Paul, if you recall last time, I was sort of conflicted about Batgirl 35, the new direction. I wasn't sure.
You were.
How much I liked it. I loved this issue.
It was really good.
Yeah, Batgirl 36. The series veers a little too close to being overly twee, but I think she's a great character. This is a great version of Barbara Gordon. The art's fantastic, and it has a playful energy to it that's really does recall the Stephanie Brown era.
Yeah, so much energy in this. I mean, we've got motorcycle chases and little chibi motorcycle drivers, and this was a lot of fun.
And then a boy that she meets a guy, and that she's awkward around him. I think there's a lot of great character stuff and a lot of great action.
And just like with last issue, I was really impressed just how much they cram into one issue.
Yeah.
Like with Thor, while I loved that issue, it just felt like there weren't as many beats as you'd want in it. This was like three issues worth of stuff in here.
Yeah.
So I was really impressed with that.
And the stuff that annoys me, I sort of overlook, like the Black Canary characterization. I just sort of go with that, but it's fine.
Yeah.
So that was really, really good. It might have been my pick of the week. But then I didn't have to make it, so I didn't want
that. It was a good week.
Good week of comics. And those are the books we want to talk about. You can go to ifanboy.com. You can find the post for this show. You can comment about these books, other books, whatever you want to talk about, or the post for the – or at ifanboy. Just do whatever. I don't really
do
care.
Do it.
Talk
about
write in your
it.
Diary. Just,
so, guys, I thought this was a good time to talk about the October book of the month.
It is.
It's November.
No time like the present.
Yeah, it's debatable.
Time's a flat circle. Somehow missed the October book of the month, forgot about it, realized it, decided I'd get it in before November ended.
Did you appear on the show in October?
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
Okay.
What happened was it was going to be seconds, and then Paul snaked it, and yes, I didn't have a backup, and then I sort of forgot about it. So that's what happened.
So what is
my story? I'm sticking to it. The book of the month for October is The Batman Adventures, Volume 1.
Oh, nice.
Just came out this week, at least on Amazon. And this is a collection of the first 10 issues of the Batman Adventures comic book that came out in the 90s. This was the companion book to the – yes, this is the companion book to the cartoon, to the Batman the Animated Series. And our friend Rachel edited this collection.
Oh, well,
our old coworker. This was funny about this, and this is a thick collection. This is 10 issues worth. And we were talking earlier, Josh, about not being anything for kids to read. This is a perfect book for kids. It's in all ages.
I actually started to read this to my son, and it's not quite perfect for him yet, but he's quite young.
Well, he's a little too young.
Yeah, I know.
But this is a great.
And I was like, oh, you know what? I got to back off.
So this is an all ages comic that came out back then. And it's funny is when this came out, it was I was probably. I don't know what year it came out. I think it was 92. But I was a little too young because at the time, all ages wasn't cool. And it still isn't cool for most comic readers. 92. So I stayed away from it until, even though I loved the show and watched the show religiously, this is the thing about comic readers that makes no sense. And I fully copped to it from when I was 13 or whatever I was. I didn't read it. But then when I was in high school, late high school, I went and visited my friend in Atlanta, and I was probably senior in high school. We went to a comic store. And they had a bunch of these issues. It was one of those stores where they have the most recent issue in the front of the rack and then behind it the back issues that they
love that
available. And so they had a whole bunch of them. And I thought, you know what? I love the show. I should probably, you know, read this. So I bought one, loved it, went back and bought all the ones that they had. This because they were not that expensive back then. And loved it. So I was actually really happy to see when they announced this collection, and I immediately picked it up as soon as I saw it. And it's great, not necessarily one and done's, although they're one and done's, like one and two part stories in the universe of the animated series with the art style of the animated series. And it features really great work from writers Kelly Puckett and Martin Pasco. And then there's art from Ty Templeton, Rick Burchett, and Mike Parabek, who is one of the great tragic stories in comics. He had that animated style, like an early Darwin Cook style that fit perfectly in these books, but... And he also did the JSA book, but never got the recognition he deserved because at the time it was the Grim and Gritty era, so his style wasn't popular, and then he ended up dying young of cancer, and it was really sad. But his, you know, the Templeton stuff and the Rick Burchett stuff, and there's another artist in here also, really good stuff. But when you get to the Parabek issues, it really starts to sing. He really knew how to tell a story on a page, and this is just a great collection of Batman stories that you can you can read and enjoy as an adult. You can give it to a kid to enjoy. And it really does capture that feeling of the cartoon really, really well.
I just ordered it.
Features all the characters. The first three issues are Penguin, Catwoman, and Joker. And then Robin shows up in the middle. And then there's, you know, Riddler and all these, you know, all the great characters. There's even a great locked room murder mystery one shot in the middle of it. Just if you like these worlds, these characters, it's the perfect collection. It's a thick and meaty book. And really, really love it. Really happy with it. Really glad they're collecting it. Yeah, they did this book for years. They went through all the different incarnations of it, and I read as much of it as I could.
Like, there's another volume coming out next summer, it looks like.
It changed with the show where you had like the yellow disappear, and then when they came back and they'd sort of redone them in the Dark Knight style, didn't they? Like, they went through all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, the book went for a while, and this is the yellow ovaled, big and beefy original design, which is my favorite of the animated designs. Now, I love the show all the way through, and you know, the designs changed, but this is my favorite Batman look.
This is when it was on Fox.
This is
the one that I would, you know, this was the one that was, I always said, like, this is the best characterization of Batman. Out of all mm-hmm. of the ones they ever, this is my favorite. Because it mm-hmm. was the most universal, but also still worked as Batman.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
Yeah, good stuff.
This is the beginning of the Bruce Timm distillation of these characters down to their essence and then making them awesome. Yeah, it says right in the cover, based on the hit Fox TV show.
They put that on primetime, man. Remember that?
It's crazy. Yeah. Yes.
A very short time, but it's 7 on Sundays or something.
I'd forgotten about that.
It's like against the Simpsons.
So if you have that, you know, if you loved the show, and most people listening probably did because it's, you know, pretty beloved, this is a great return to that world. And so check it out, The Batman Adventures, Volume 1. It is 10 issues and 240 pages, so it's a lot of bang for your buck.
If you're out there and you hate Batman the Animated Series, don't write to us. I don't want to know you're out there.
So that is the October book of the month.
It's November.
Yeah, well, in the geological sense of time, I'm pretty on the money.
Yeah.
I literally can't argue with that. that's very true.
So check that out if you want great animated Batman stories, and I'll be definitely looking forward to this volume 2. I hope they do the whole thing, but we'll see. So, we have time for an email?
It's up to
no.
us, really.
No.
Well, we can do a short one. We can do a really short one.
Okay.
Let's see.
Ben writes, I noticed that every time you recommend books, they tend to be gems we may have overlooked upon release. How about digging deeper into the archives? What are your top recommendations for comics printed before you were born?
Well, Paul, you were born after the Batman Animated Series, right?
I was born during.
What year were you born?
I was born in 1984.
Oh. All right. You're actually not as young as I think if you are in my head. I know that, but all right.
Well, I thought about this. There's a couple of problems. One is comics were written differently, so they didn't lend themselves to collections.
That's true.
As easily. True. Like, there wasn't like a 6-issue finite story that they told in The Flash in the 70s because they were all, you know, for the most part, single issue stories. So you get things like the showcase collections with these big phone books, black and white books of those books. Because it's not like Infinity Gauntlet or Dark Knight Returns that you could just easily put into a trade. So there's less of those. There's not the same that they didn't exist. There's just a lot fewer of them. But I do have a whole bunch of those. Batman Chronicles, which collects the Golden Age Batman stories. I have a Wonder Woman Chronicles or Superman Chronicles. If you like Golden Age comics, there's those. I also have a bunch of the Marvel Omnibus for, like, you know, the Kirby Avengers and the Ditko Spider-Man and the Kirby Fantastic Four and those kind of things.
Yeah.
Those are giant Omnibus.
And I don't know if those necessarily make great reads. As much
depends
as
what you're
are.
Into. You don't like that style, but I do.
Yeah, but what I'm going to say is they're not. Maybe if they don't, you don't necessarily think the style of writing is for you. You can literally just look at those pages.
Yeah,
and it's all there. It's all there. You know, like what was it about Spider-Man? You know that got people. Well, that's it. That's where it started. You can look at it that. Or what is it? Why are people still talking about Ditko? Why are people still talking about Kirby? That stuff. So for something like that, you could read like I think the Galactus Saga is 3 issues, something like that. I remember we read the Kree-Skrull War at some point. You could read Death of Captain Marvel. These are just like little things that are sort of popping up around.
Well, there's one I thought of that I remember you and Josh, you and I and Ron all buying at the same time was the Hard Traveling Heroes story. That was from before we were born.
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
Green Lantern, Green Arrow. That was one of the first prestige hardcover books with a slipcase that I bought.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I have that one.
That's from the 70s, and that's the Denny O'Neil, Neil Adams classic run.
I'm guessing this is one of the first ones that you ever had. Was the greatest Joker stories ever told and the greatest Batman stories ever told? They sort of give you a little bit from every era.
True.
I ended up owning
a lot of those anyway in single issues.
Looking at my essentials and showcases, I think the ones that – I mean, a lot of those were just great for when we did like the great moments in comics history when it was just like mm-hmm. a weird panel just out of context.
Right.
But I didn't necessarily enjoy just like reading those cover to cover. But the ones I did, the Jonah Hex showcase.
Early
Jonah Hex is really good. I think there's two of those now. It was just one for the longest time, but now there's
wonderful
two.
Wonderful art.
Yeah. What else?
You can go back and read like there was a whole bunch of Kirby crime comics that were reprinted by
I wonder now that they've straightened out the legal stuff if you're going to start seeing more Kirby collections from Marvel.
I guarantee you are.
So you'll probably start seeing a lot of that stuff come out now.
Speaking of Kirby, I really like the Commandi. There's two really nice hardcover.
There's a lot of Kirby collections. There's the new God stuff. Yeah, Fourth World.
They're tough to find now. I have the first hardcover, but even the paperbacks I think are out of print on some of the volumes. It's hard to track those down.
A couple other ones I go to, if you can find them, Harvey Kurtzman War Stories are amazing. They're gorgeous and they're so well done. I was going to say the name's not old enough, but Will Eisner.
Right, yeah.
Contract with God, Last Day in Vietnam. If you can actually just any of his spirit stuff, if you can find it, it's gorgeous. As Carl Barks' Ducks books.
Oh, yeah.
It's sitting right in front of me, and I didn't. They just started putting out Don Rosa, which is the more modern stuff, but Carl Barks, yeah, I love those. Really formative for me were the Tintin books by Hergé. Mm-hmm.
There's actually a lot, and we actually have talked about a lot of these.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, those
Carl Barks Duck books are fantastic.
Yeah. I mentioned recently the Marv Wolfman, Gene Colan, Tomb of Dracula, I really enjoy. Mm-hmm. It's kind of wacky, but in a readable way.
But you know what? I haven't actually made it to it, but that reading the Marvel history book by Sean Howe, all that 70s Englehart and stuff, the Captain America crazy stuff, the Jim Starlin stuff. Mm-hmm. That's stuff that always, like, I know what it looks like and it looks amazing, but it's stuff I've always wanted to go back and read. That informed so much of what, you know, Brubaker did, for example.
Right.
And so sort of through the mid 2000s and informed that kind of comics. Denny O'Neil and Neil Adams on anything, but Denny O'Neil, like, on The Question.
Mm-hmm.
That's just great stuff. The 70s was a really wonderful time for comics.
Yeah, so there's a lot. I mean, really, you know, Josh and I are old, so we're born in the 70s. So we're limited to the 60s and the early 70s and mid 70s on these. So there's still a lot in that 15-year period.
Yeah.
God, we're only 15, 20 years younger than modern comics.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah. 62?
That's weird.
61 or 62?
15 years.
Right. Yeah, that's about right.
Wow. That's depressing.
Don't age math. Never age math. That's a rule.
You can email us at contact@fanboy.com or call our voicemail line at 888-FANBOYS-326-2697. If you have a question that will cause us to think about our mortality, then please send it in.
Like those guys in the trenches at Verdun.
Those guys, they had a lot shorter mortality.
Everybody got your helmets on?
Yeah. Average field officer's span of life, 6 weeks. Go to ifanboy.com. You can comment on this show. War thoughts, totally accepted. They will not be deleted. You can talk about this week's books, the stuff that we talked about. You can tell us that you didn't like the Batman animated show. That will be deleted.
Yes.
And you can find all the podcasts.
We'll just be ridiculed and we'll allow it.
Yep. We'll allow all the beatings. The beatings will commence until Murak improves. That's a t-shirt that I wore when I thought Booger was a really cool character. No.
He was a good character.
He was.
There's the street value of this mountain is incalculable.
That wasn't Booger. That was Armstrong. What's his
name?
That was from Better Off Dead. Not the same character. Curtis Armstrong.
Listen, it's the same character.
Guys.
The same
Wonder
character.
Wonder Joints. I watched that as a kid. Never made me want to do drugs, but I still think that's a great scene. What the fuck is a frush?
You can follow iFanboy at twitter.com.
Have you seen Revenge of the Nerds, Paul?
Yes. And facebook.com/iFanboy. And you know, and you
One
can follow
summer?
Us individually.
One crazy summer?
At C.S. Kilpatrick, Fuzzy Typewriter, and Jeff Canada.
Listen, Pretty. Better Off Dead is good. $2.
Amazing lessons from a man who knows how to ski. Listen, you go that way very fast. And if something gets in your way, turn.
Finally, if you like this show, write a review on iTunes. It's how people find podcasts. Better yet, tell your friends about podcasts. You got a comic friend who's people all the time we see on Twitter asking for a good podcast to listen to, and someone will be nice enough to mention our name. So you must know somebody out there who's looking for podcasts. If you do, tell them about iFanboy. We appreciate that. So
you should listen to O Comics as well, because on an upcoming episode, I interview a guy who's building his own bat armor.
Oh, I saw that story. The guy in Philadelphia. I saw that.
Yep.
Did you go to his house and you guys both talked about Warder?
Live very close right. to it's his
uncomfortable,
university.
Uncomfortably close?
Well,
like,
no.
Is it you?
When he's working on the armor, I can go over and take pictures. No, it's not.
Yeah, you could listen to Paul's show, but if I were you, I'd probably just go listen to We Have Concerns with Jeff Canada. Oh, Sick Burn?
Too. That's a good show.
Sick Burn?
Listen to Serial. Serial's good.
All right, until next week, I'm Connor.
I'm Paul.
I'm Josh, and I've already figured out the song that I'm going to put on here.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.